talks with Damask Holdings, the nobles accused us of selling Naboo to the highest bidder, to, and I'll quote, a shady extra-system cartel of ruthless criminals.
The human paused for a moment.
You should understand, Magister, that our world has yet to overcome a long history of forbidding outside influence. The royal houses realize that trade is a sensitive issue and are now advocating for Naboo to oversee the transport of plasma to other worlds. But frankly, we lack both the funds and the expertise to make that a reality.
How were the nobles able to learn of our overtures to you? Plagueis asked.
We haven't been able to determine the source.
Plagueis muted the audio feed and turned to Hill. We need to consider that someone close to our organization may be responsible for this leak. Hill and some of the others nodded in agreement. The royal houses need to be informed that a leap into the business of transgalactic shipping is ill-advised, Plagueis said when he had reactivated the audio feed. Naboo will need funding, logistical support, and perhaps even Republic legislation, and it is precisely in those areas where Damask Holdings can serve as an intermediary. Actual funding would come from the Intergalactic Banking Clan, and other conglomerates would be involved in assisting Naboo in tapping the plasma and in the construction of a spaceport of sufficient size to handle the ships needed to transport it. Varuna stroked his tapered beard.
Mon Tapelo will certainly want to address these points with the electorate.
Plagueis liked what he was hearing. You mentioned certain counter-allegations released by an unknown party.
Yes, and I confess that we were as surprised by the information as anyone. It seems that our group is not the first to seek the advice and support of off-world interests. Roughly 60 standard years ago, at the height of a war between the Naboo and the Gungans, our monarch was killed, and it has now emerged that some members of the very same royal houses that opposed Tapelo struck a secret deal with a mercenary group to intervene in the war should the Naboo suffer further setbacks. Fortunately, the conflict was resolved without the need for outside help. In fact, as a result of that conflict, the monarchy has since been an elected rather than hereditary post.
You say that the information came as a surprise, Plagueis continued. Varuna nodded.
The information had to have been provided by a source within the opposition.
It now fell to Larsh Hill to mute the feed.
Varuna is correct. We were able to trace the release of the information to the young son of one of the nobles. In the hope of avoiding a scandal that could divide the electorate, the head of the royal house has perpetuated a lie that the Tapelo group chanced on the information and made it public, when actually only someone with access to the family archives could have discovered it.
His interest piqued. Plagueis said, "What is the name of the royal family?"
"Palpatine."
"And the son?"
"Just that. He goes by the cognomen alone."
Plagueis leaned back in the chair to consider this, then said, "We may have found a potential ally. Someone willing to keep us informed of the royal's plans for the election."
"An agent," Hill said. "An inside man, as it were."
Plagueis canceled the mute function. "We wish to visit Naboo in order to discuss these matters face to face." Varuna was clearly surprised.
"A public appearance by you would allow us to refute any allegations of secret collusion."
"Then all of us have something to gain." Varuna bowed at the waist.
"It will be our great honor to welcome you, Magister Damask."
Later it would be said by Naboo and Gungan alike that they couldn't recall a colder winter than the one that followed Higo Damask's autumnal visit to their world. The rivers and even the falls below Theed froze. The rolling plains and tall forests were blanketed 3 meters deep with snow. Plasmic quakes rocked the Gallo Mountains and the lake country, the holy places, and the undersea city of Otogunga. And many of the egresses of the underwaterways that hollowed the planet were blocked by ice floes. Tapelo and Varuna had insisted on sending one of Naboo's signature starships to transport the Munes from Munalinst and the sleek Nubian had sat down at Thede spaceport, a small facility that would have to be enlarged 20-fold if Naboo hoped to one day become a player in galactic commerce. The city itself struck Plagueis as the very antithesis of Hartnaden, where the capital of Munalinst was vertical, angular, and austere. Thede was low, convex and condensed, dominated by rotundas crowned with verdigris domes or flat roofs and tiered towers supported by round-topped archways. A river and several tributaries ran through the place, spanned by filigreed bridges and plunging in a series of high falls from an escarpment to verdant flatlands below. A cortege of air skimmers carried the black-robed munes through streets better suited to pedestrian traffic to the interior courtyard of an ancient palace, where pretender to the throne Bontapolo, Varuna, and several other human advisors and would-be ministers of both sexes were on hand to welcome them. Draped in chemisook robes and propped by boots with high heels, the bearded and blonde-haired Tapolo already carried himself like a regent, albeit of a second-rate world, remaining seated while Higo Damask and the rest of the Munes were introduced, and flanked by guards dressed in flare-skirted uniforms and armed with vintage blasters. Varuna, on the other hand, immediately fell into step alongside Damask as the Munes were being escorted into the central building of the complex.
"As I said when we spoke weeks back, Magister Damask, we are honored by your visit."
"And as I told you then, we all have something to gain." Damask turned slightly to look down at him. "Especially you, I suspect." Varuna gestured to himself in question.
"I..."
"Not now," Damask said softly. "When the time is right, you and I will confer privately." Under a broad arch, and through a lobby of polished stone, they moved as a group, ultimately arriving at a second small courtyard, where several tables had been set up, some overflowing with food and drink, and the largest reserved for the Munes. No sooner were they seated than servants appeared and began serving food, including various meats that the Munes politely declined. The practice of consuming food while conducting business was one that Damask had grown to tolerate in his dealings with humans, but in secret he detested it. For many years he had detested the company of humans as well. Barbaric meat-eaters that they were, humans were a highly evolved species. Given their native intelligence and shrewd faculties, they deserved to be treated with the same deference Munes were afforded. And yet many of the galaxy's sapient species considered themselves to be equal to humans, who had only themselves to blame. Unlike Munes, humans had no compunctions about lowering themselves to the level of less advanced beings. The slow-witted, disadvantaged, needy, and pitiful, making a pretense of equality and demonstrating a willingness to work and sweat cheek by dewlaps alongside them. Instead of celebrating their superiority, they frequently allowed themselves to be dragged down into mediocrity. A Mune would no sooner accept a position as a starship pilot or a smuggler than he would a career diplomat or a politician, unless required to do so for the greater good of Munes everywhere. Humans, though, could be found in every occupation. But what made them especially intriguing was their seeming intent to spread themselves to the far reaches of the galaxy, without any sense of control or planning, at whatever cost, and using up world after world in their insatiable quest, as if their diaspora from the core reflected some sort of species imperative. More important, the Force seemed not only to allow their unchecked dissemination, but to support it. In human hands, Damask suspected, rested the profane future of the galaxy. Naboo Blossom Wine was still being poured when the Munes made their pitch to the Tapolo group, employing the courtyard's holoprojector to provide a virtual portrait of what Thede and other nearby cities might look like 10 years on. Funding by the IBC would be allocated to tapping the plasma reservoir beneath the plateau. At the same time, Outer Rim Construction and Assembly, one of Cabra's companies, would build an enormous refinery on the site of what was currently parkland, overlooking the Verdugo Plunge, housing the technology inside a triple-domed structure of neoclassical design. The Munes detailed how the cliff walls could be stabilized and the tributaries of the Salio River rerouted without disturbing the existing architecture or Feed's network of underground tunnels. Below the cliffs, the Trade Federation would enlarge Feed's spaceport, constructing a massive landing platform that would follow the natural curve of the escarpment and open a second commercial port at Spinnaker. By the time the pitch concluded, Tapelo looked stricken.
"Clearly you've put a good deal of thought into this," he said to Larsh Hill. "But there is no room in your plans for Naboo firms."
"The last thing we want is to have these construction projects be seen as signs of foreign occupation," Hill said. "Our partners wish to work closely with Naboo's own plasma energy engineering and the Feed Space Vessel Engineering Corporation to make certain that the improvements are viewed as a cooperative effort. When the construction phases are completed, the refinery and the spaceports will be under your full control."
Some of the color returned to Tapelo's face.
"The opposition contends that Naboo will be forever indebted to the banking clan and the Trade Federation."
"Only until the plasma begins to flow," Damask said. "I understand your trepidation, but the question you need to ask yourselves is whether you can win the crown without our help." Separate conversations erupted at every table.
"I suppose so, Magister," Tapelo said, signaling for quiet. "But perhaps it's better to run the risk of defeat rather than ascend to the throne in dishonor."
"Dishonor?"
Hill repeated in aggrieved disbelief.
"Have we crossed the galaxy to be insulted?"
"Wait," Varuna said, coming to his feet and gesturing for calm. "We meant no insult to Damask Holdings."
He turned to face Tapelo and his hand-picked team of ministers and advisers.
"Yes, we must be mindful of the concerns of the present electorate, but we shouldn't allow the fearful voices of a few to cripple our chance of joining the galactic community and raising the profile of the entire Chamal sector. I suggest we act boldly. To avoid being perceived as having bowed to pressure, I say we use this unprecedented visit by Damask Holdings to announce publicly that we, and we alone, are capable of entering into an arrangement with the banking clan and others that will allow Naboo to restructure its debt, achieve favored world status with the Corps, and provide for tax cuts, lower interest rates, and endless opportunities for employment both on and off-world."
He clenched his fist for emphasis.
"We must seize this moment before it disappears."
Slowly Tapelo and the others began to nod in agreement.
"Do you have anything to add, Magister Damask?" Tapelo said at last.
Damask spread his hands.
"Only that we couldn't have stated our case any better than Feed's future governor already has."
"Hear, hear,"
one of Tapelo's advisers said, lifting his goblet of wine in a toast to Varuna. The rest followed suit and drank. And Damask thought, one day soon, Varuna will be the king of Naboo. The plan called for the Munes to spend the night in Feed and resume talks in the morning. With Hill and the others being shown to accommodations, Plagueis excused himself and struck out on foot for the university building on the opposite side of the city. His route took him through leafy parks over two bridges past towers and obelisks, and through the heart of Palace Plaza with its pair of triumphal arches. Crowned by a statue of a human figure, the university's central rotunda was set back from one of the Soliu tributaries, dominating a precinct of stately buildings and public places. Plagueis located the student center and went to the registration desk, which was staffed by a young, fair-haired female who stared openly at him as he approached.
"I'm looking for a student named Palpatine," he said in Basic.
"I know him,"
she said, nodding.
"Do you know where I might find him just now? Is he perhaps attending a class?"
She blew out her breath.
"He comes and goes. Maybe I saw him at the youth program building."
Maybe.
I think it was him.
Humans, Plagueis thought. Can you direct me there? Her answer was a flimsy map, which Plagueis used to weave his way across campus to the headquarters of the Legislative Youth Program, an organization that oversaw Naboo's mandatory public service curricula. Young people of both sexes buzzed about him, some scarcely noticing him, others going out of their way to get a closer look. At various times, he asked Dr. Palpatine, and was able to narrow his search to a square that fronted the columned library, where he eventually recognized Palpatine from hollows Hill had provided, walking briskly through the square in the company of a human male nearly twice his age, black-haired, and wearing more formal attire. Palpatine himself was dressed in slacks, short boots, and a loose-fitting shirt that was closed at the collar. Of average height, he had wavy red hair, a prominent nose, and a narrow face that humans would probably have found friendly. His back was straight, his arms were long relative to the length of his torso, and he moved with an easy grace. For some time, Plagueis observed him from a distance, approaching only after Palpatine had parted company with the older man. Palpatine didn't spy him until Plagueis was only steps away, and when he did, he turned sharply and began to walk in the opposite direction. "Young human," Plagueis said, hastening his own pace. "A moment of your time." When Palpatine failed to acknowledge him, he lengthened his stride and called, "Palpatine!" Slowing to a reluctant halt, Palpatine looked over his shoulder.
"How do you know my name?"
"I know more about you than just your name," Plagueis said, coming abreast of him. Interest and caution mingled in Palpatine's blue eyes.
"Normally I take exception to people claiming to know something about me, but since I know something about you as well, I'll restrain myself."
"From doing what?" Plagueis wondered. "What is it you know about me?" Palpatine exhaled in mild impatience.
"You're Higo Damask, the president, no, the magister of Damask Holdings. My father said that you were coming to Naboo to meet with Bontapolo. Your group is shoring up his bid for the throne."
"Did your father say that I might be coming to meet with you also?"
"Why would he? And what exactly is it you want with me?"
"I believe we have something in common."
"I very much doubt that."
"Perhaps all the more reason to become acquainted, then." Palpatine glanced around him, as if searching for an escape. "Who was the man you were speaking with earlier?" Plagueis asked. Palpatine started to say something, then cut himself off and began again.
"My mentor in the youth program. His name is Vida Kim. He's an aide to Naboo's Republic Senator, and will likely succeed her."
He looked hard at Plagueis.
"And not a supporter of Tapelo."
Plagueis weighed the response. "Are you interested in politics beyond your participation in the Legislative Youth Program?"
"I'm not sure what I want to do after university."
"But you've some interest in politics."
"I didn't say that. I said I wasn't sure."
Plagueis nodded and looked up at the library building. "I'm a stranger to Theed. Would you consider showing me around?" Palpatine's jaw dropped a bit.
"Listen, I'm
just a short tour." Engaging in small talk, they walked along the river in the direction of the concert hall and Queen Iram's Needle, then crossed a footbridge and began to angle toward the palace complex. Aside from providing Plagueis with hollows of Palpatine, Larsh Hill hadn't been able to offer much information regarding the youth's background. Though he lacked an appellation, Palpatine's father was a wealthy, influential royal with a reputation for advocating for Naboo's continued independence and isolation. The family name was thought to be an ancient name of state among hereditary noble families, or perhaps a name borrowed from an ancient region of Naboo. "Theed is a beautiful city," Plagueis remarked as they emerged from a narrow lane into the palace plaza.
"If you like museums,"
Palpatine said offhandedly. "You've no interest in art?" Palpatine looked at him sideways.
"I enjoy art, but I'm more of a minimalist."
"In all things?"
"I wish Theed weren't so crowded. I wish the winters were milder. I wish our king had fewer advisers and ministers."
"That sounds like a political statement."
"It's simply my personal opinion."
"They're not mutually exclusive."
Palpatine stopped short. "What are you attempting to draw out of me?"
Plagueis indicated a nearby bench. When Palpatine finally relented and sat down, Plagueis said,
"It has come to my attention that you were responsible for the release of some information that has aided Tapalo's campaign."
Genuine surprise blossomed on Palpatine's face.
"How?"
Plagueis held up a hand.
"That isn't important right now. What is that you did so against what would have been the wishes of your father, your mentor, and some of the other royals."
"Are you planning to divulge this?"
Plagueis searched Palpatine's face.
"What might happen if I did?"
"To begin with, my father would murder me."
"Literally,"
Palpatine exhaled forcefully.
"He would disown me."
"It's true, then.
You and your father find yourselves on opposite sides of the issues that animate the coming election."
Palpatine lowered his gaze to the ground.
"It would be far stranger to find ourselves on the same side of any issue."
He looked up again at Plagueis.
"I want to see Naboo break with the past. I want us to belong to the greater galaxy. Is it wrong to want to play an important role in the history of the Republic?"
Plagueis rocked his head.
"Governments rise and fall."
"You have a better idea of how to govern the galaxy?"
Plagueis allowed a laugh.
"I'm just an old mune who wouldn't know about that."
Seeing through him, Palpatine snorted.
"Just how old are you?"
"In human years, I would be well over 100.
Palpatine whistled.
"I envy you that."
"Why?"
"All the things you've done and can still do."
"What would you do?"
"Everything,"
Palpatine said. They got up from the bench and began to amble back toward the university complex. Plagueis submerged himself deeply in the Force to study Palpatine, but he was unable to glean very much. Humans were difficult to read in the easiest of cases, and Palpatine's mind was awash in conflict.
"So much going on in that small brain," Plagueis told himself. "So much emotional current and self-interest.
So unlike the predictable, focused intellects of the Outer Rim sentients, especially the hive-minded among them." Palpatine stopped alongside a brightly colored, triple-finned land speeder with a pointed nose and a repulsor lift engine that looked powerful enough to raise a load lifter droid.
"This vehicle is yours?" Plagueis asked.
Pride shone in Palpatine's eyes.
"A prototype patrol-grade flash. I race competitively."
"Do you win?"
"Why else would I bother racing?"
Climbing into the speeder, Palpatine centered himself at the controls.
"I have just the thing to adorn your rearview mirror," Plagueis said.
From his breast pocket, he fished a coin of pure erodium, dangling from a length of chain, and dropped it into the palm of Palpatine's hand.
"It's an antique."
The young human appraised the gift.
"I've never seen anything like it."
"It's yours."
Palpatine showed him a questioning look.
"Who knows? Perhaps you'll go into banking one day," Plagueis said.
Palpatine laughed in a relaxed way.
"Unlikely, Magister Damask."
"I suppose there are better ways to earn credits."
Palpatine shook his head.
"Credits don't interest me."
"I'm beginning to wonder just what does."
Palpatine bit back whatever he was about to say.
"Palpatine, I wonder how you would feel about working with us. Damask Holdings, I mean."
Palpatine's thick eyebrows beetled.
"In what capacity?"
"To be perfectly blunt, as a kind of spy."
He went on before Palpatine could speak.
"I won't say that you and I want the same things for Naboo, because clearly, and notwithstanding your feelings about the architecture, you hold your world dear. My group, however, is less interested in Naboo's government than it is in Naboo's plasma, and what it will fetch on the open market."
Palpatine looked as if the plain truth was something new to him.
"If you had phrased that any differently, I would have rejected your offer out of hand."
"Then you accept?
You're willing to update us regarding whatever political machinations your father's group may have in the works?"
"Only if I can report directly to you."
Plagueis tried once more to see him in the Force.
"Is that your wish?"
Palpatine returned a sober nod.
"It is."
"Then by all means,
your report exclusively to me, Plagueis said. I'll see to it that the necessary arrangements are made. He stepped away from the speeder as Palpatine powered it up. Palpatine fell silent for a moment.
I could take you for a ride tomorrow,
he said at last, above the whine of the engine.
If you have time, I mean. Show you some more of Theed and the outskirts.
If I have your word, you won't go too fast? Palpatine smiled wickedly.
Only fast enough to keep it interesting.
Chapter 10 The Cycle of Violence. Flying a meter above the ground, Palpatine's agile speeder skimmed over the plains below Theed Plateau, leaving long, curving trails in the tall grasses. The day was bright and clear, the warm air abuzz with insects and strewn with pollen.
Exhilarating,
Plagueis said from the passenger side bucket seat when Palpatine's foot had eased off the accelerator.
Maybe I'll become a professional racer.
The Naboo might expect more of the eldest son of House Palpatine.
I ignore the expectations of others,
Palpatine said without looking at him. Was the speeder a gift from your father? Palpatine glanced at him.
A bribe, but one I accepted.
Does he approve of your racing? Palpatine made a harsh sound.
My father hasn't ridden with me for years.
He doesn't know what he's missing.
It has nothing to do with my talents, Palpatine turned slightly in the driver's seat. When I was younger, I was responsible for the deaths of two pedestrians. At the time, my father threatened never to allow me to fly, but he eventually relented.
What made him change his mind?
Palpatine swung forward.
I wore him down.
I'm sorry, Plagueis said. I didn't know.
Although, in fact, he did know. With help from 114D, he had learned that Palpatine's troubled past had seen him bounced from one private school to the next, following incidents of petty crime and offenses that would have landed a commoner in a correctional facility. Time and again, his father, who shared with his son a penchant for violence, had used his influence to rescue Palpatine and avoid the specter of family scandals. To Plagueis, however, the youth's transgressions were only further indication of his exceptionality. Here was a youth who had already risen above common morality and had judged himself unique enough to create an individual code of ethics. Palpatine pointed to the distant tree line.
There are some ancient ruins in there, but that's Gungan territory.
Have you had any dealings with them?
Personally, no. But I've seen the ones that come into Moenia to trade for goods.
What are your thoughts about them?
Aside from the fact that they are long-eared, slimy-tongued primitives?
Aside from that, yes.
Palpatine shrugged.
I don't mind them, so long as they keep to their submerged cities and waterways.
Not get in the way.
Exactly. Humans deserve to have the upper hand here.
Plagueis could not restrain a smile.
There are many worlds in the galaxy where the matter of who has the upper hand, as it were, is in dispute.
That's because most beings are afraid to take charge. Think what the Republic Senate might accomplish under the leadership of a strong being.
I have given thought to that, Palpatine.
What does the Senate do in response to each and every crisis? It dispatches the Jedi to restore order and moves on without addressing the roots of the problem.
Plagueis found the boy's youthful ignorance entertaining.
The Jedi could rule the Republic if they wished, he said after a moment. I suppose we should be grateful that the Order is dedicated to peace.
Palpatine shook his head.
I don't view it like that. I think that the Jedi have dedicated themselves to limiting change. They wait for the Senate to tell them when and where to intervene and what to fix, when in fact they could use the Force to impose their will on the entire galaxy if they wanted. I'd have more respect for them if they did.
Do you grant your father respect when he attempts to impose his will on you?
Palpatine's grip on the steering yoke tightened.
That's different. The reason I don't respect him is because he's not half as intelligent as he thinks he is. If he could admit to his weaknesses, I could at least pity him.
Bringing the speeder to a sudden halt, he turned toward Plagueis once more, his face flushed with anger. Between them, dangling from the rearview mirror, was the coin Plagueis had given him. Before long, I will own this human, Plagueis told himself.
House Palpatine is wealthy, the youth went on, but not nearly as wealthy as some of the other houses, and not nearly as influential with the king and the electorate, despite my father's attempts to take a leadership position with the royals. He lacks the political acumen needed to elevate our house to a position of true entitlement, and along with it, the awareness to recognize that the time has come for Naboo to exploit its matchless resources and join the modern galaxy. Instead, he and his cronies, in complete and utter political ineptitude, want to keep us caged in the past.
Does your mother share his views? Palpatine forced a laugh.
Only because she espouses no views of her own. Only because he has made her subservient to him, as he has my well-behaved brothers and sisters, who treat me like an interloper and yet, to my father, represent all I can never be.
Plagueis considered the remarks in silence. And yet you honor your house by going by its name. Palpatine's expression softened.
For a time I thought about adopting the name of our distaff line. I haven't rejected the dynasty I was born into. I've rejected the name I was given. But not for the grandiose reasons some think. Just the opposite, actually. I'm certain that you, of all beings, understand as much.
There it was again, Plagueis thought. The deceptive cadence, the use of flattery, charm, and self-effacement, as if rapier feints in a duel, the need to be seen as guileless, unassuming, empathetic, a youth with no desire to enter politics, and yet born for it. Tenebris had told him from the start that the Republic, with help from the Sith, would continue to descend into corruption and disorder, and that a time would come when it would have to rely on the strengths of an enlightened leader, capable of saving the lesser masses from being ruled by their unruly passions, jealousies, and desires. In the face of a common enemy, real or manufactured, they would set aside all their differences and embrace the leadership of anyone who promised a brighter future. Could this Palpatine, with Plagueis' help, be the one to bring about such a transformation? Again, he tried to see deeper into Palpatine, but without success. The psychic walls the youth had raised were impenetrable, which made the young human something rare indeed. Had Palpatine somehow learned to corral the Force within himself, as Plagueis had concealed his own powers as a youth?
Of course I understand, he said finally.
But when you were young, did you question your motivations? Especially when they ran counter to everyone else's?
Plagueis held his challenging gaze.
I never asked why this or why that, what if this or what if that. I simply responded to my own determination.
Palpatine sat back in the speeder seat, as if a great weight had been lifted from him.
Some of us are required to do what others cannot, Plagueis added, in a conspiratorial way.
Without a word, Palpatine nodded.
Plagueis had no need to delve any further into whatever traumas had given rise to Palpatine's cunning, secretive nature. He simply needed to know, does this young human have the Force?
2 standard days later, on Malastare, a world of varied terrain that occupied a prime position on the Hydean Way, even the deafening clatter and nauseating odor of speeding pod racers wasn't enough to distract Plagueis from thinking about Palpatine. Damask Holdings had requested a meeting with Senator Pack's team, and the leader of the Grand Protectorate had provided the Munes with box seats for the Phoebus Memorial Run. They had arrived directly from Naboo in the expectation of discussing business matters. But the Gran, Dugs, Zycharians and nearly everyone else in the city of Pixolito were more interested in sport and betting.
Have you picked a winner, Magister?
Pack's team asked after 2 pod races ripped past the viewing stands. Lost in his thoughts about Naboo, Plagueis said,
I believe I have.
His conversations with Palpatine seemed to have opened some sort of emotional floodgates in the human. The Munes had scarcely left Naboo behind when the first of several
holocommuniques was received from Palpatine regarding the royal's latest plans for undermining Bon Tapolo's bid for the monarchy. Plagueis had listened attentively, but in fact Palpatine had precious little to offer. Since the release of the information about the royal's actions during the Gungan conflict, Palpatine's father had been conducting his meetings behind closed doors at the family estate, and had forbidden his son from so much as discussing the coming election. Tapolo's campaign, by contrast, was on the upswing, as a result of having announced a pending deal with the intergalactic banking clan. The urgency of Palpatine's transmissions suggested that he had formed an attachment to Plagueis, and was reaching out to him not only as a secret employer, but also as a potential advisor. In Higo Damask, Palpatine saw the wealth and power he had long sought for House Palpatine. Confident that the young human would continue to be useful long after Damask Holding's plans for Naboo had been realized, Plagueis did nothing to discourage the attachment. "Why is it that we never see humans competing in the races?" he asked Team after a moment. The Gran waved his six-fingered hand in dismissal.
"They haven't the talent for it. The favorite to win today is the Dug at the controls of the Blue Racer."
Plagueis tracked the pod racer for a moment. In the stands below him, thousands of Dugs, standing on all four appendages, on hind legs, or supported on arms only, were barking encouragement. Plagueis found Malastare's high gravity oppressive, and the Gran more so. They had arrived on the planet 1,000 years earlier as colonists, and had proceeded to beat the native Dugs into submission. The Protectorate had since grown to overshadow the Gran homeworld Kinyan, and was a powerful force within the Republic Senate, with wide-ranging influence in the mid and outer rims. Seated alongside Plagueis, Lash Hill leaned forward to address Pak's Team.
"Perhaps Gardula will be able to entice humans to pilot pod racers in the course she is refurbishing on Tatooine."
Team honked in irritation.
"So it's true. You support the Hutt."
"It's simply business," Hill said.
But Team was not appeased.
"Is this the purpose of your visit? To reopen wounds that have not yet healed?"
"Yes," Plagueis said flatly. Team's trio of eye stalks swung to him.
"I don't compound the offense," Hill interrupted.
Team feigned incomprehension. "From whom did you learn of our interests on Naboo?" Plagueis asked. The Gran looked to his comrades, but found no support in their abrupt silence.
"From whom?" Plagueis repeated. A low of resignation escaped Team.
"We were approached by subtext mining, following the unexplained disappearance of some of its members. The ones I encountered on Sojourn, I suspect."
"They were in fine health when they left the gathering," Hill said.
Team nodded.
"I'm certain they were."
"Why did subtext approach you?" Plagueis said.
Team hesitated, then said,
"To inform us that you are involved in a deal for the plasma,
trusting that you would try to subvert our efforts by making them public," Hill said.
The Gran snorted.
"First you strike a deal with Gardula that favors Tatooine over Malastare, and now Naboo's plasma captures your attention, despite your offer to increase the cost of Malastare's energy exports. So why shouldn't we have alerted your opponents on Naboo, when you would have done the same?"
Plagueis waited for him to finish, and for a group of pod racers to pass. Then he fixed his gaze on the assembled Gran.
"You harm yourselves by attempting to sabotage us. The Protectorate could have profited from Naboo, as the Trade Federation will, but no longer."
Pax Team's huge feet slapped the floor of the private box.
"We refuse to be demeaned. Again, I remind you, Magister, that promises were made."
Plagueis smiled inwardly. It was true that Tenebris had had plans for the Gran. At one time, Pax Team had been put forth as someone the Sith could move into the Chancellorship and manipulate from a distance into making mistakes
that would bring the Republic to its knees. But Plagueis had now begun to explore other options.
"We are not without allies and cronies in the Senate," Team was saying in a huff. "We can crush any legislation you wish to see passed, or arrange for your bills and no-bid contracts to languish in procedure for years. We'll put one of our own into the chancellorship. We'll deny the Trade Federation shipping rights on Kinyon and along the trade spine. We'll turn the Dugs loose on the Munes." He glared at Plagueis. "You'll never get what you want, Magister."
"On the contrary," Plagueis said, as he and the other Munes were rising. "I already have what I want." A rousing cheer went up from the stands as a Tung pilot overtook the favored Dug. Plagueis turned to Hill as they were exiting the private box. "Order the Sun Guards to retrieve the miners we marooned in the Tingalan. Execute them and have their bodies dumped at the gates of Subtext Mining's corporate headquarters on Corellia." A freshly minted, capital-class starship returned Plagueis and Hill to Naboo. Manufactured by Hirsch Kessel and Gwori, the vessel was shaped like an elongated pod with a flat underbelly. A lateral wing transected the convex hull aft, in which were housed arrays of powerful hyperwave transceivers. On board, along with the chief executives of Damask Holdings, were several high-ranking members of the banking clan, including the nephew of Chairman Tonath, all of them dressed in full IBC regalia. A month had passed since Plagueis' initial visit, and in the interim, he and Palpatine had spoken by hollow on many occasions. The intelligence the human provided, though scant, had allowed Plagueis and Hill to keep one step ahead of Bontapolo's detractors, and as a result, he continued to enjoy a slight margin with the electorate. The Mune groups were approaching Naboo's spaceport immigration stations when they were intercepted by a contingent of armed security personnel wearing leather jerkins, tall boots, and brimmed hats. Ushered into a glass-walled holding area, equipped with not much more than benches and refresher units, the Munes waited for over an hour until two palace guards entered, demanding to know which of them was Higo Damask. After identifying himself and assuring Larsh Hill that he needn't worry, Plagueis followed the guards outside the terminal to a waiting, round-nosed Gian speeder. A uniformed guard, seated at the controls, ordered Plagueis into the open-topped speeder's rear bench seat, where one of the escort personnel joined him. He didn't have a clue as to where he was being taken, but refused to give the guards the satisfaction of telling him that he would soon find out, or words to that effect. Instead, he sat silently in the cushioned seat, careful not to register even the slightest surprise when the pilot began to steer the speeder away from Theed and out across the rolling, verdant terrain Palpatine had taken him through. "You may as well make yourself comfortable," his seatmate said at last. "We'll be traveling for about 2 hours." Plagueis nodded in response and allowed himself to drift into a light trance in preparation for whatever lay in wait for him at their destination. Gradually, the undulating plains began to rise, and a ridge of mountains came into view, limned against Naboo's brilliant blue sky. The speeder followed a broad river valley into hills lush with foliage, where herds of short-limbed shocks grazed and frolicked. As the speeder gained altitude, the river narrowed and quickened, fed by waterfalls and crystalline lakes. Pure white clouds were beginning to form at the summits of the higher peaks when the speeder slewed across a vast stretch of meadow and came to a halt in front of a majestic home built in the style of Theed's fat domes and graceful towers. Two of the guards led him up a wide flight of stone stairs into a cool and dimly lighted foyer. Abandoned there, Plagueis wandered past wall hangings and plinthed statuary to the opposite end of the foyer, where round-topped floor-to-ceiling windows overlooked a veranda and a large lake beyond. Seated at a table were an aristocratic-looking female human of middle age and a sulking male youth of Palpatine's age or younger, engaged in what appeared to be serious conversation. Touched by a breeze coming down off the slopes of the mountains, the surface of the water sparkled like Megiddo gemstones. As Plagueis turned his back to the lake, his attention was drawn to a tapestry depicting the same family crest he had observed on the pocket of Palpatine's jacket, and featuring a trio of creatures, Vermak, Iwa, and Zalaka. He became aware of someone approaching him from behind, but didn't budge.
"Beautiful work, isn't it?"
a basso-voiced human said in Basic. Plagueis turned to find a tall man of patrician bearing standing at the threshold to a larger room.
"As is the view," Plagueis said, gesturing broadly toward the lake.
Dressed casually, though in fine taste, the silver-haired man advanced into the foyer.
"I'm so glad you decided to accept my invitation to visit, Magister Damask. The presence of armed guards suggested an absence of choice, Kusinga Palpatine."
"They were for your protection, Magister."
"I never thought of Naboo as a dangerous world."
"For some, it is," the elder Palpatine said. "But now that you are here, allow me to show you around."
The tour took them through a dozen rooms adorned with plush carpets and works of art. Stonework predominated, but the furniture was constructed of the galaxy's most prized hardwoods. By the time they stepped down onto the veranda, the woman and the youth were nowhere to be seen, but the breeze had picked up and a storm was threatening. Kosinga Palpatine indicated an island in the distance, and the stately house that rose from the shore.
"That is Varakino," he explained, "a prize of the Lake Country. Once owned by the poet Omar Barranco, and presently occupied by the Nabiri family."
He glanced at Plagueis.
"Are you perhaps familiar with Barranco's masterwork, The Defense of Naboo?"
"Sadly, no." "I'll arrange for you to be provided with a translation."
"A copy in the original text would be fine. I'm fluent in your language."
Testing him, Kosinga Palpatine switched to Naboo to say,
"Yes, I understand you've become quite the expert on Naboo politics."
Before Plagueis could respond, he waved his hand in front of a censer that summoned three servants onto the veranda, each bearing trays of food and drink. Plagueis exhaled in a fatigued way.
More food, he thought. More olfactory stimulation for human noses.
They sat opposite each other at the same table the woman and youth had occupied earlier, and remained silent while the servants laid out the repast.
"Fresh fruits, vegetables, and farinaceous dishes," Palpatine said, indicating the spread. "No shark or other meats."
Plagueis forced a smile. "Perhaps you'll take up a study of the Mune language next." His host frowned, then sat back in his chair to allow the servants to heap food on his plates. He didn't begin eating until the servants had exited, and stopped after only a few mouthfuls and set his utensils down with finality.
"Let me tell you a short story about Bontapolo and Ars Varuna," he began, glowering at Plagueis. 70 years ago, some 2 decades after our own conflict with them, the Gungans found themselves embroiled in a war for survival with a mercenary army. Fortunately, the Gungans prevailed, though not without many deaths and the loss of some of their swamp cities. Very little was ever made public regarding the cause of the war, or the source of the mercenaries. But I'm willing to let you in on one of Naboo's darker secrets, in the hope that you'll learn something from it. The reason for the war was plasma, and the houses that contributed most to funding the mercenary army were House Tapolo and House Varuna. When my grandfather learned of this, he challenged Tapolo's father to a duel of honor, and eventually succumbed to the injuries Tapolo's blade inflicted."
He gestured to a lawn that bordered the veranda.
"The duel took place just there."
Plagueis glanced at the spot.
How utterly romantic and human.
Kasinga Palpatine's handsome face took on color.
Perhaps you fail to grasp the point of the story, Magister. Tapalo, Varuna, and the rest of that group of thugs are interested only in power and wealth at whatever cost to Naboo. The discovery of a plasma reservoir below Theed was the worst thing that could have happened. And now they mean to exploit it for all it's worth, with the aid of influential beings like yourself. This is why Tapalo must never be king.
Plagueis pretended to consider it, then said,
It would appear that the electorate disagrees with you.
Palpatine nodded.
For now, yes. But we have plans for bringing the electorate back into line. Beginning with an announcement that the deal Tapalo struck with the banking clan has fallen through.
I wasn't aware that it had, Plagueis said evenly.
Palpatine became angrier as he spoke.
Why do you think we stopped your party from entering Theed? We still wield enough power to keep you from setting foot on Naboo. And you may as well hear the rest of it, Magister. The Republic Senate has been apprised of Munilint's attempt to meddle with and destabilize the sovereignty of our world.
When Plagueis didn't respond, he added,
The Naboo have a legend about 6 impenetrable gates that hold back chaos. House Palpatine is one of those gates, Damask.
And we Munes represent chaos, Plagueis said without making it sound like a question.
Palpatine leaned forward and spoke in a calmer voice.
We are not opposed to having Naboo join the galactic community when the time is right. But not now. And not like this. Tapalo's promise of tax cuts and trade with the Corps, those are the very tactics the Republic deploys to seduce primitive worlds into surrendering their resources.
He shook his head as anger took hold of him once more.
The Naboo admire philosophers, not bankers and deal brokers. Tapalo's election to the throne would lead to catastrophe.
The defense of Naboo, Plagueis said. The poem you mentioned.
What about it?
Whatever became of the author? Barranco. Kasinga Palpatine's eyes narrowed to slits.
He was abducted by assailants and never found.
He rose halfway out of his chair to add,
Are you threatening me? Here in my own home?
Plagueis made a placating gesture.
I thought we were discussing history.
I only meant to ask, what might happen if you are unsuccessful in restraining chaos, and Tapalo wins despite your best efforts?
I've already told you that that will not happen, and here is why. Because you're going to tell your friends in the banking clan and the Trade Federation that you've lost interest in Naboo, that you've found better company among the Hutts, slavers and spice runners of the Outer Rim.
He paused momentarily.
You're a very long way from Munilinst, Magister Damask. I strongly suggest that you reboard your ship and leave the Chommel Sector as quickly and as quietly as possible, lest anyone fall victim to an untoward event.
Plagueis stared at the lake.
I take your meaning, Kasinga Palpatine, he said without looking at him.
And one more thing, Palpatine said, emboldened. I don't know precisely why you've taken such a keen interest in my son, or he in you, but you're to have no further dealings with him.
Plagueis turned to him.
Your son has great potential. Potential I don't want to see despoiled by your kind. We're moving him out of your reach, in any case.
I'd been given to believe that the Naboo were an open people. But then, the Gungans probably wouldn't agree either.
Palpatine stood up sharply.
Enough of this! Guard! He said.
And when 3 of them hurried in,
Get him out of my sight!
Chapter 11. Avatar of Mortality. The planet Shangri-La sponsored a month-long retreat for members of the Legislative Youth Program. Once a year, young beings from a host of worlds arrive to participate in mock Senate trials in and around Hanna City, and to tour Shangri-La's vast agricultural projects, wilderness areas, coral reefs, and garden parks. It was in Gladian Park, a game reserve outside coastal Hanna, that Plagueis paid young Palpatine an unannounced visit. But it was Plagueis who was surprised.
"I knew you would come, Magister,"
Palpatine said when Plagueis and 114D turned up at one of the game reserve's viewing blinds.
"How did you know?"
"I knew, that's all."
"And just how often are your premonitions correct?"
"Almost always."
"Curious,"
114D remarked, while Palpatine was hurrying away to excuse himself from the company of two friends. Plagueis recognized the older male as Palpatine's mentor in the youth program, Vida Kim, and sensed that the comely black-haired female was Kim's paramour. At the conclusion of Palpatine's animated explanation, Kim turned his head to show Plagueis a look of disapproval before moving off with his companion.
"Your mentor doesn't care much for me," he said when Palpatine returned. Palpatine dismissed it.
"He doesn't know you."
Standard weeks had passed without any communication between the two of them. Judging by Palpatine's mood, he knew nothing about the forced meeting in the Lake Country, and yet he was agitated just the same, possibly in reaction to something Koxinga had done to monitor or foil his son's off-world holotransmissions. With Damask Holding's secret agent silenced, the royals had gained ground. Despite Tapelo's denials that the deal with the banking clan had dissolved, the travel ban imposed on the Munes had planted seeds of doubt among the electors, and the contest for the throne was becoming more heated with each passing day. Worse, the banking clan's interest in Naboo was beginning to wane.
"We'll have to keep this meeting brief," Plagueis told Palpatine while they were following an elevated pathway that connected the viewing blind to one of the park's rustic lodges. "Your father may have dispatched surveillance personnel."
Palpatine ridiculed the idea.
"He is monitoring my off-world communiques. That's why you haven't heard from me. But even he knows better than to have me watched."
"You underestimate him, Palpatine," Plagueis said, stopping in the middle of the pathway. "I spoke with him at Convergence."
Palpatine's mouth fell open.
"The Lake House? When? How?"
Plagueis made a soothing gesture and explained in great detail what had taken place. Concluding, he said,
"He threatened, too, to place you out of reach."
All the while Plagueis spoke, Palpatine was storming through circles on the narrow path, shaking his head in anger and bawling his fists.
"He can't do this," he snarled. "He hasn't the right. I won't allow it."
Palpatine's fury buffeted Plagueis. Blossoms growing along the sides of the pathway folded in on themselves, and their pollinators began to buzz in agitation. 4D reacted as well, wobbling on its feet as if in the grip of a powerful electromagnet.
"Had this human truly been born of flesh and blood parents?" Plagueis asked himself. "When in fact he seemed sprung from nature itself. Was the force so strong in him that it had concealed itself?"
Palpatine came to a sudden halt and whirled on Plagueis.
"You have to help me."
"How can I help you?" Plagueis asked. "He's your father."
"Tell me what to do. Tell me what you would do."
Plagueis placed a hand on Palpatine's shoulder and began to walk slowly.
"You could use this incident as a means of emancipating yourself."
Palpatine frowned.
"Naboo doesn't honor that practice. I'm in his sway until I'm 21 years old."
"The legalities of emancipation don't interest me, and they shouldn't interest you. I speak of freeing yourself, of completing the act of recreation you began when you rejected your given name."
"You mean disobey him?"
"If that's as far as you're willing to go, and without thought to consequences."
"I wanted to..."
"Uncertainty is the first step toward self-determination," Plagueis said. "Courage.